נשמס כל חי תברך שמך השם אלוהינו ורוח נשמס כל חי נשמס נשמס כל חי תבורך שמחו שמחו השם אלוהינו רואי נשמס נשמס כל חי רואי נשמס נשמס כל חי תבורך
This week is Parshas Bereishis. It's a fresh new beginning, a new start. Tonight's class has been dedicated and sponsored, first of all, sponsored by Mayan Yisrael in honor of a very, very, very dear friend of Mayan Yisrael and someone who gives his everything to us over here. Eitan Palyavin on his birthday tonight. So we want to wish him all the blessings in abundance, Ashnas Bracha Natzlacha, with tremendous blessings, in both in the physical and in the spiritual. Also, the sponsorship this week has been in honor of Moshe ben Bela, for the neshama of Moshe ben Bela, and for Esther Bas Penina, and for Binyamin Ben Shendel, who Shama should have an aliyah, passed away, still in the Shiva now. Okay, let it be a big schus for all their neshamas, and have a tremendous aliyah. The CD this week has been sponsored by Mr. Beryl Goldstein, and this is an honor of the Refuah Shleima of Gita Rivka Bas Chaya Risa. May she have a speedy recovery, take of a miyad mamish, instantly, right now. Okay. This week, Parshas Bereishis is, as mentioned, the new beginning. The world is new, everything is new. The truth is, the world is renewed constantly. Every day, as we say, Amachadish Betuvei B'chol Yom Tamid, that Hashem recreates the creation every moment, every day, and then every moment. There is a newness to creation. But it is pronounced and felt at various times of the year. There's a more strength or something, the intensity of the newness. And that is like Rosh Hashanah, which is the beginning of the year, and also the week of Bereshis, we have a new creation. The world feels fresh. Even the rain today makes everything feel so new and fresh and clean. So this is a good beginning for us as we start learning again the Torah from Parshas Bereshis, discovering new meaning and inner insight into the deeper meaning of the parsha. In this parsha, we learn about, right at the beginning, at the onset of the parsha, the Torah tells us about the calling of the names, that after Hashem created all the creations, Adam Arishon, he brought all the animals in front of Adam, and Adam called a name. Adam called a name for all the animals. Hashem brought the animals to him that he should see Marshamoy, what would be his name. So it mentions over there the various animals and beasts and birds. Just 1 second. We have it over here in right after the story of creation. In Perek Beis, Pasuk Yotes. Vayava Yala Adam, he brought all the chayas asada, all the beasts of the field, and all the birds of the sky. He brought them to Adam, Liro Isma Yikraloi, to see what he will call him. V'chol Asher Yikraloi Adam Nefesh Chaya Hu Shemay. And whatever that Adam Arishon will call them, every living being that Adam will give them a name, Hu Shemay, that's his name. And then it says Vayikra Adam Shemos, that Adam called names L'chol Abahema to all the animals. Ul'oifa Shemaya meant to the birds of the sky. Ul'chol Chaya Sasad and the beasts of the field. That's the naming that is mentioned in the parsha. So the question is, fish isn't mentioned. It doesn't say that Adam named the fish. So this is a question that the commentaries are in doubt. Did he name the fish or he didn't name the fish? Because if it names all the other creatures, why doesn't it say about the fish? So the first one to bring up this question is Tosvis, is a commentary on the Talmud, on the Gemara, in Masechtas Chulin, on Daf Samach Vav. Ahmed Bey's second side of page 66. So Tosfos over there is dealing with another question. I mean, it doesn't reach a conclusion if Adam Arishon named the fish or not, but it comes because of a different question. The question over there is that the Talmud tells us when it's dealing with the laws of kashrus, of kosher and the non-kosher, so we know that fish need fins and scales in order to be kosher. So there's a statement by the sages that every fish that has scales has to have fins. There is no fish in the world with fins without scales. Sometimes we might not notice the scales, or maybe there's just a few scales, but if there is a fin, there must be scales. So Tosfos asks, how do the sages know that? That's quite a blunt question. How do the sages know? I mean, did they inspect? Especially way back then, they have the ability to go under the sea and look at the thousands and thousands of different species of fish. So how did they know that there wasn't, that how can they make a statement like that? So the first possibility is that it was handed down from Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon saw all the fish. Why? Because it says that God brought all the creatures to Adam for him to look at it. So he saw the fish and he took notice that there isn't a fish that has fins but doesn't have scales. So if it has, it must have, I mean, you can have the opposite. You can have a fish with fins without scales, but if a fish has scales, then it must have a fin. That's the idea. So the question, so Adam saw all the fish, and that's how we know this, and he passed it down. That's our tradition in regards to this thing. But then Tosfos says, behold it, it doesn't mention fish. So maybe he didn't name the fish, because it doesn't say it in the pasuk. So then it says, but possibly even though it doesn't say it openly, but it's hinted to in the words. Or if we're going to say that Adam did not name the fish, then how would we know today? How would the sages know? Maybe this was something that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu when he gave him the laws of kashrus. So he told him this thing. God revealed this to Moshe. Halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. It's something, a tradition passed down from Moshe. It's a secret, divine secret. God gave it to us, and that's how we know about it. These are the two possibilities. The later commentaries, or the earlier commentaries of the Chumash, the Radak, Reb David Kimchi, and the Cheskuni, which are early commentators on the Chumash, they conclude simply, without any doubt, that Adam did not name the fish. Why didn't he name the fish? They say simply, because all the other animals can come to him. The animals just came to Adam and he named them. But the fish couldn't come to Adam. Why not? Because if they come out of the water, they would die. So how was he supposed to name the fish? So for that reason, very practical answer, for that reason, he didn't name the fish. That's their explanation. That's why he doesn't mention fish. However, the Medrash, this is a Medrash Chasir V'Yatir, not of a popular Medrash, but there is a Medrash called that way, Chatir V'Yatir. And in that Medrash, it clearly states that Adam named all the animals, including all the fish. And this is also hinted to in Medrash Tanchuma, in Parsha Shmini. He says over there that the word doesn't speak explicitly about the fish, but he says that Adam named Kol HaBruyim or Kol HaNivroyim, all creations in the world were named. So if he says all the creations, so they would seem to imply even the fish. So this is the question. Did he name fish or didn't he? Now the truth is, it sounds like a trivial matter. It's nice that he named the fish. Now there's nothing else to speak about on Parshas Bereishis. Such a rich Parsha. We have the creation. We have later the early days of man and the sin of the tree of knowledge and all these major subjects. So big deal if he named the fish. He didn't name the fish. But in the Torah, there's no trivial things. Everything is of major significance. And this question, when the other named the fish or didn't name the fish, if we delve deeper, so we see that over here is the question about life and the question about man's accomplishments in life and what is our role that we play in this world, and particularly the role in the calling of the names of all the creatures. But in order to understand this, we first have to examine, in a broader sense, what was the significance, what was the meaning, and what was the reason, simply, of why Hashem brought the animals for Adam in order to name them. What was to be accomplished with that? So the Medrash says that one of the things this did accomplished was it demonstrated to the angels the supreme intelligence, the great wisdom of the human being, that he is wiser than even the angels above. How was it displayed and how was this shown to them by Adam calling the names? Because it says earlier when God created man, he consulted with the angels. Should he create Nasa Adam? It says, let us create man. Because he consulted with them. And the angels saw that Hashem is very excited about this creation. So they were really intrigued to know what this man is going to look like. He must be a very, very impressive being. But when they saw the way God formed the man, and that man is just an earthy creature coming made out of clay, they were shocked. And they were kind of disappointed. Say, what's the big deal about this human being? So Hashem said, don't worry. You'll see that he's smarter than you. I'll show you that he's much smarter than you guys are. So later, they brought all the animals to the angels that they should name the animals. And they couldn't figure it out. They didn't know the names. So then he brought all the animals in front of Adam, and Adam gave a name to every animal. And this is what silenced their argument, and they were sort of satisfied. They said, oh, wow, he can name the animals. So now, this itself needs some serious explanation, and all the commentators ask the question, what's the big deal about naming the animals? So what? So he named the names. There was no trademarks yet then. Everything was new. You can give any name you want. So they couldn't come, they couldn't be creative enough, and be original enough to give up, put together some syllables, some sounds, and make different sounds in order to identify different creatures. So what was so difficult? What was so hard? So their explanation is that it wasn't just the name that he called. The creations wasn't just a random thing, calling them this, just choosing any word. But they chose real names. They chose Adam. Man chose the real name that is appropriate for the animal. As the Medrash uses, the Medrash says the words, he said to the ox, L'cho noel likrois shoyer,
You are befitting. For you it's beautiful. For you it's nice to call you ox. For you it's nice. For you it's beautiful to call you Aryeh lion. For you it's so nice to call you Nesher, eagle, and so forth. So what is the connection? What did he see? What is significant about the names? And here we have a few explanations. So the first explanation is that of Nachmanides, the Ramban, and Rabbeinu Bachaya. Again, these are the Rishonim, these are the early commentators on the Chumash. And they say that the name that Adam gave constituted or expressed, defined the characteristics or the personality traits that this particular creature has. Every creation has its talents, its abilities, its properties. And Adam was able to depict, he was able to look at the animal, glimpse the animal for a moment, and immediately discern, immediately figure out what the animal and what this creature is all about, or what this bird is all about, instantly. So what we have today, zoologists and millions of dollars is spent on people studying the behavioral patterns of animals and their psychological behavior, or whatever, or the things about the way animals work. And even with all this study and with all this research, we haven't really figured them out. So much remains a mystery. Adam knew everything about all the animals as soon as he saw them. He didn't have to observe them just a moment, and he was able to tell you everything about it. And that's the incredible wisdom. And that's what the angels were impressed. That he can look just externally at something and see every... And we're dealing with down to the tiniest details. To every single toad, every single butterfly. Meaning of every type of what, how their uniqueness and how special they are and what they contribute to the overall life on this planet. And this is impressive. So this is one explanation on a very simple level that Adam was able to do that. And the Rabbeinu Bachaya says that when he for instance, he says that he gives an example. He says the lion. As soon as Adam looked at the lion, he realized that the lion possessed majestic features, that he had royalty to him, that he's the king of the beasts. And that's why, to the point that even the prophets, when they speak about, they want to use something as an analogy for Hashem, for God's kingship, they use the lion as a metaphor. So when Adam looked at the lion, he noticed that instantly. And therefore he called it an Aryeh. And he said, why? Because Aryeh possesses the letters of the Hashem's name. Yud-Kei are both letters in Hashem's name. And Aleph too is also a letter of Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud of Hashem's name. So he saw these godly elements to the lion. And the Reish stands for Ruach. The lion possesses a godly spirit to him. And that's why he called him Aryeh. When he looked at the donkey, he noticed that this is a very heavy animal, very lazy and not too smart. And he's extremely earthy and coarse. And that's why he called him Chamor. Chamor comes from the word Chomer, Chumrius, corporal, heavy, and lowly. When he looked at the horse, he saw that horses have the ability that they go out to war. And when they go out to war, they have the spirit of triumphing, of victory. And they revel in it. They're excited about it. They're joyous about their participation. As you can hear in the shrill of horses in the battlefield. That's why he called them sus, because sus comes from the word sus. Sus means simcha. Joy, happiness, and the horse exhibits joy, and that's the reason he called him Sus. And so on with all. He mentions just three or four of them. So is all the other creatures. The Kabbalists take it a step further. The Shloha Kaddish, the Reb Shai Horowitz, 16th century Kabbalist, says that it's more than just the physical characteristics and personality traits or psychological strengths and abilities of the animal, but something deeper than that. He was able to recognize in the creations their spiritual root, their spiritual source. As we know that every creature down here below has a spiritual source above, in the world, in the higher realms, in the higher creations. Like, for instance, the ox. The ox below is a derivative. It comes from the Pnei Shor, the face of the ox, in the chariot, in the divine chariot. In the divine chariot, the face of the ox are angels, very, very supreme and sublime angels, who, and those angels demonstrate, or they have within themselves, certain qualities that are of the ox below, of course, in an abstract, sublime way. And that's why they're shoyer, they're the ox. And they are the root of the ox below. And the same as the lion above. The lion below stems from the lion in the divine chariot. And every creation, every creature in this world has its spiritual source in the angels above. And when Adam saw the creations, he named them with an appropriate name that is speaking of their spiritual angelic source in the Malachim above. That was he connected, as he says, the Tachtoinim to the Elyonim. The lowers were connected to the above, showing the connection of where they come from. And this is his explanation. Now, the Hasidic masters take this even one step deeper than that. And here is where we see the progress of Torah, how it moves in dimensions. There is the nefesh, or rather there is the pshat, the simple interpretation. And then there is the remez and so forth. But then there is soid, the secret, which is Kabbalah. And then there is what's called razin dirazin, the secrets of the secrets, which is even higher and deeper than Kabbalah. And something that is revealed by the great Hasidic masters. And they speak of something much higher in Adam HaRishon's naming of the creations. When he called them with a specific name, he was revealing and uncovering their source in divinity, in God's light. Not their spiritual source in the higher worlds, the spiritual beings from where they come from. But even deeper than that, the godly essence. Because everything in this world is created by Hashem's words. Hashem spoke and He created. However, the words that Hashem used to create the creations aren't visible in the creations. We don't even know them. Because in the 10 utterances that Hashem spoke, it only speaks of the general creations. It doesn't speak of the details, as we will soon explain. So the words are just, let there be this, let there be vegetation, let there be animals. So the particular name of every creation isn't mentioned and isn't seen. However, God did speak it. Because Hashem spoke everything. So what he revealed was their spiritual source. And this is elaborated by the holy Mezritch HaMagid in Sefer Ora Torah this week, in Parshas Bereishis, the successor of the Baal Shem Tov, where he explains at great length that the wisdom of Adam HaRishon was he able to penetrate and get to, so to speak, crack the divine code and get to the words of God that created every creation, revealing that in the creation. Much higher than its spiritual source in the world of angels above. And this is also explained, this again this week in the parasha, in the Be'er Mayim Chaim, by the great Rav Chaim of Chernowitz, is in a very, very beautiful discussion and a very awesome ideas about the whole idea of revealing the names. And in the writings of the Sfas Emes and of the Tanya, at great length, in many places, the significance of the name, of a Hebrew name, that the Hebrew name represents, that constitutes the divine energy, which is the source of life of this creation. And when you're calling something by its name, the Hebrew name, it's revealing its spiritual content and its godly essence. And that's the significance of Adam's wisdom, of calling the names, getting back, showing the source of letters in Hashem's words when Hashem created the world. However, this doesn't explain what's the benefit of it. It's great. So he called and he named everything. He revealed and he uncovered the source. But what was that for? Besides showing how smart he was, that the angels couldn't do that, then Adam was able to see that. So, but besides that, to what benefit, what gain is there, what purpose is there to naming all the creations? Whether it's revealing their characteristics, or whether it's revealing their spiritual source, or whether it's revealing their godly source. How does that contribute? What does that do for the creations or for the world? So there's two ways of understanding that. One way of understanding that is but that was to the benefit of man. Since Hashem put the human being in charge over all the creations, that he has to take care of all the creations, he's going to, he derives benefit from them, he can use them. They're all created to serve him. He is created to serve his creator. So in order for him to be able to have proper usage and utility of all the creations, he had to know, we have to know what they're all about. So Adam Arishan named them, gave them a name. The name that tells us about what this animal, what this creature is all about, so that we know how to apply it, how to use it. Like going into a pharmacy. All the bottles look the same. Bunch of bottles with pills. What do you know what is what? So if you look at the label tells you this is this and this is that. So Adam had to label the creations so that his descendants would know. See, the descendants were not as wise as him. They couldn't just look at the creation and know. They would have to study it. Adam had this incredible gift because he was the first man. God created him with enormous wisdom. And he can look instantly at the creation knowing what it's all about. So it's in order that his descendants should not try to take a lion and try to harness it to a plow. How do they know? Maybe this is the animal that's made for that. And try, or maybe take a deer or a zebra and use it as a vehicle for transportation or for pulling a wagon. So they wouldn't know that. So Adam Rishon told them, he gave them names. So now we know what the lion is for, and what the ox is for, and what the horse is for. Each one. So this is to the benefit of man, that we needed to know the names of all the creations. Another explanation could be that it's not just to the benefit of man, that man should be able to make proper usage of all the materials of the world, but it is rather to the benefit of the creations themselves. That by Adam Rishon calling the creations by their names, he revealed and he brought these abilities, the potential powers, the potential strengths and talents or abilities that every creation has, he brought it from a potential to actualization. He brought it into a manifest state, from an essential state into a manifest state. Because it's possible that a being, a certain creature or being, anything, can have certain qualities and certain abilities, but it doesn't realize it himself, doesn't know his own strengths, doesn't know his own powers. Calling it by the name was calling it forth. Like we spoke once on the power of speech. Speech is revelation. So when Adam Avishan called, and he called every creature by his name, it revealed, it brought forth. It made the creation know of its own strength so that it can be applied in action and in behavior. And we can explain that both spiritually and psychologically. Spiritually, it can mean just by the power of Adam's neshama, by calling something to its name, he unleashed the inner strengths and the inner abilities of every animal. Or even just on a simpler way of understanding it, it can just be by speaking the name, it is endorsing or giving recognition to the creation that you possess these qualities. You have certain things. Know that you have it. It's just like with our children. You have so many children, I mean all children, everybody, they have so much potential, so many different things that a child possesses. And there are sometimes a phenomenal educator and a good teacher or a good parent who notices these things, even if they're very subtle, tiny demonstrations or little expressions of this particular power. The parent or the educator notices it and says, wow, you know, you're going to be a big artist one day. Or you're an amazing dancer. Like, you're amazing now yet, but you're going to be a dancer. Or you're musically talented. Or whatever else it is. You're so organized or you're such a great whatever. So by telling your kids these things, It gives them that confidence, and it gives them the knowledge, and it's not just about the confidence of it. It draws forth that strength, that ability. And then you have less fortunate children, whose, even though they demonstrate or exhibit quite pronounced expressions of their abilities and their talents, it goes unnoticed. No one pays attention. No one looks at it, either because they're busy doing other things or for whatever reason. Or just don't care. And as a result of that, people live their entire lives and they had so much to contribute, so much to give, so much to blossom, and it remained untapped and it remains dormant. So Adam HaRishon, when he called every creation by his name, gave strength to the creation. Can you imagine that butterfly when it stood before of Adam? And Adam like looked at it. So the animal, what did it feel like? Well, this creature, when Adam spoke and he said, you are so and so. You have a name. You have such talent. So this little mouse thought to himself, wow, even though I'm so tiny and I'm so small, but look at this. He believes in me. He sees something in me that is special and good. So enable this creature to realize its full potential or be that all that it can be, fully project its power and its strength. And so it was with all the creations. He gave the creations their strength and their ability by calling them by that name. Now we can understand the reason of the question, whether Adam and Rishon named the fish. Well, we didn't name the fish. Depending on how we will, what was the reason of the name calling? How do we see the purpose of calling the names? If it was just for the utility of man, that man should make full usage, he should know the creatures in the world, so he should be able to benefit from them. So we can understand there's no need to name the fish. Because what kind of usage can man make of the fish? The fish are in the water, he's on the land. There's not much interaction between the man and the fish. True, you can go fishing and you can catch the fish, and you know, but God gave him dominance over the fish. But what can he do with them? After they're dead, he can make them into locks or whatever. But there you go. But Adam, the other animals, he is to use while they're alive. So he needs to know more about them. So that's why he named them. However, if we're going to say that the naming of the animals was for the animal's sake, for the creation's sake, so that he will bring out their abilities and their strengths, so they can fully realize their purpose and completely manifest themselves in this world. So we understand the fish needed it just like anything else. So there's a reason to name the fish, just like there's a reason to name all the other creations. This would be a possible good explanation. The opinion that says that he didn't name the fish is because they're learning that the naming of the animals is for the benefit of the animal. I'm sorry, for the benefit of man. Don't need it. And the opinion that says that he did name the fish was because they understand that the calling of the names of the animals was for the animal's benefit. So they needed that calling too. It's interesting. That is why if you look at Rashi, Rashi makes a statement like this. That kol ha-sheyikra lo ya'odam nefesh chaya hu shemoy is its name. So Rashi makes a comment, Hu Shemoy Lo'olam. This is its name forever. What is the significance of that? What does he have to add those words? This is its name, Lo'olam, forever. Simply, what was bothering Rashi was the word Hu Shemoy. This is its name. And yeah, whatever he named it. God called him to name the animals, so he named the animals. What is the emphasis? Hu Shemoy, this is its name. So other commentaries say that what it means when it says Hu Shemoy, this is his name, is trying to say that it wasn't just a random calling of names. Hu Shemoy, this is the real name. Whatever he named them, this is truly what the animal is supposed to be called. But Rashi doesn't say that. What then? Hu Shemoy lo'olam forever. That's what the emphasis is. Because again, Rashi understood that the calling of the names was to benefit the creations, to help them fully realize themselves. So for that reason, he said, Hu Shemoy La'olam forever, meaning Adam HaRishon's calling of the names of the creations is still impacting every creation till today. Bunny rabbits today are still influenced by Adam HaRishon calling them by their name. I don't know the Hebrew name for rabbits, but our nevis or so. By giving them that name back then, it's still being influenced today. That's the power, Hu Shemoy La'olam, and has an effect on the world. So this would be a nice answer, good answer, good explanation. However, if we examine this a little further, we see that it's more than just this. Because, you know, the Torah, everything is so accurate and everything is so precise. So it's not just what the Torah says, but it's also where the Torah says something that teaches us so much. So if we're looking in the Chumash, when it describes the place where Adam HaRishon called the animals, meaning where does it say it? It puts it in a very interesting place. And that is during the, I'm sorry, it connects it to the creation of the woman. When Hashem was making Chava, in the story of the creation of Chava, It describes over there that Adam named the animals. And the commentators already explain what the connection is, the name, but we're not going to get into that. But one thing we see is if we're going to draw a parallel and make the connection. See, just like when Hashem was creating Chava, what was the creation of Chava? The creation of the Chava was the completion of the human being. The human being was lacking, and in order to complete the human being, he created Chava. And what kind of completion? Really, the woman was embedded in man. She was one of man's ribs. So she's part of the creation of man, but she's not fully, but man's full potential as a person is not fully revealed until Hashem created the woman. So the woman, because the man is considered half, until he finds his soulmate. So she is the completion of him, meaning the revelation of him. So the point of creating Chava was, I mean, you have a creation already, but it's not fully expressed. To fully express the creation of the woman. So, it would seem like, the same is also the calling of the names. The callings of the names is a similar thing. It has the same quality. By calling the names, man was, Adam was finishing the creation. It's like part of the creation process. Creation was incomplete, and when Adam Arisha named every creation, he completed the creation. Just like Hashem completed man by creating Chava. In what sense did he complete it? He completed it in the sense that he revealed it. It had all the potential, but it would have been locked in potential. He revealed that potential. Similar to Hashem revealing the human's potential through creating of the woman. And that's the significance of him calling the name. So it's clearly imply that calling of the names was had influence on the creation themselves. It wasn't only to the benefit of man. Because if the calling of the names would only be so that man knows how to identify them for his usage, so then why would be that the story be told as part of the completion of creation? It's not the creation has been completed. Now man has his job to identify the creations and know what he has to deal with. But it's not the story of creation. If this is still at the end of the story of creation, it seems like clear that the calling of the names influenced the creation. Therefore, we have to say that everybody agrees. Those who say that he named the fish and those who say that he didn't name the fish understand that the calling of the names of all the creation has an influence on the creature named by that name. The question is only, what's the content of that influence? And based on that, we'll understand if he has to name the fish or he doesn't have to name the fish. So to understand that, going back to the position of where the Torah tells us the story about naming of the animals, if we look at Parshas Bereshis, we find that this Parsha has two parts to it. The first part of Bereshis, first chapter of Bereshis, talks about the creation as God is creating it. He created a world and all the details of the creation. The creation is done, it's finished. Second half of Parshas Bereshis speaks about is the beginning of the story of man. After, meaning, first man appears, but not as the story of man, but as the story of God creating. He's completing the creation. Then begins another story. This is the events of the human being. And you have both the high expectations, the great purpose of the human being, that God created him to be the caretaker of the garden. And on a broader sense, it means the caretaker of the entire world, of the Lashamra. And then the failures of the human being, and the terrible fall, and the denigration, all the way down to the very end of the parsha, where there is full-fledged corruption, is the story of man. Where does Hashem say, where do we have the story of calling of the names? Where does this belong? Is this part of the story of creation, or is this part of the story of man's work in this world? So it's interesting, it's not clear. Because it's somewhere in between. It's in a place where we can learn it, we can see it two ways. Either this is still the completion of the story of the world, of Hashem creating the world, or that this is the beginnings of man's work in the world. Which means according And anyway, we're going to look at it, it's man doing something. Man is having an influence on the world by calling the names. But what kind of influence is he having? Is it that he's completing the creation that God created? And it's just that Hashem asked Adam HaRishon, come at the very end, help me out, help me put the final touches to this creation. You call them by their names. But it's a story of creating the world. Or it's the next chapter, chapter 2. After God created the world, man was given a job. Man's job is to influence the creation, to elevate the creation. When man is calling names, is he continuing the creation? Or is this already our beginning of our work as human beings in this world to lift up the creation? And that's going to be the argument over here, if he named the fish or not. Because we can understand the calling of the names in two ways. One of them is to further the creation itself, and the other one is to rectify the creation. Because the creation itself, as God created, was a creation of distancing, a creation of concealment. Meaning when Hashem created the world, it was an act of shrouding and veiling and concealing himself, pushing the world, separating the world from him. And where do you see that again? In the name of the world. The world is called Olam. And as we said earlier, the name always tells us the essence of something. Olam comes from the word Helem, concealment. Because the very creation conceals on the truth. Why? Because the fact that we can look at things and they appear to be things and we don't see God, when in truth the only reality is Hashem, Ein Od Malvado, there's none but Him, and everything is just an expression of Him. The fact that there's other things, so that's a concealment. That's the biggest distortion, that's the biggest lie. Creation causes that illusion, that cover-up, that concealment. And the whole process of creation is the process of concealing and making it darker. And in that sense, the calling of the names enhanced the concealment. It enhanced the darkening. It made the creation more separated and disconnected from Hashem, from its source. And we see that. In the process of creation, we see an order. How the creation evolves from closer to farther. You see, this increasement of darkness, the process of causing more and more concealment is connected to the process of coming from oneness into multiplicity, to coming from the singular into the many. Into the plural world that we see. Because Hashem is one. He's one. Before He created the world, there is only Him. In the process of creation, there becomes many. And the many is what causes us to be so fadreit. The many is what confuses us. Because we see this and we see this and we think maybe this is something, maybe that is something. And we don't see the oneness, we don't see Hashem. So what is one of the greatest influencers in the darkness is the fragmentation or the many, the multiplicity in the creation, the variations of the creations that causes a distortion and a concealment. So we look in creation, we see that the process comes, it emerges from a world of oneness to a world of many. Before creation, as we said earlier, only one. Once creation begins, even the first day, Hashem created the world the first day, there's already two. What is the two? There is heaven and there's earth. Two things. There is light and there is darkness. There is night and there is day. There's already two. However, the variation or the separation that there is in creation is still very subtle. Why? Because you can still sense the underlying oneness. You can still feel and sense the truth, the godly root from where everything is emanate. Where night and dark are coming from the same source. Or night and day. Or heaven and earth. That's why at the first day of creation it says Yom Echad. It should have said Yom Rishon. The first day it says Yom Echad. So Rashi says because the world was still permeated with the Achdus, with Hashem Echad. It can still sense in every creation how it's originating from the singular essence, from the singular oneness of Hashem. Come to the second day of creation, over there the borders and the separations, the distinguishability between one thing and another thing is beginning to be pronounced and highlighted to a stronger degree. There is a separation. Yehira kiyah, let there be a firmament. And the firmament is separating between the heavenly, the heavens and the earth. The heavens are close to God. They sing to Him, connected to Him, attached to Him. The earth is disconnected, separated, removed, dark. The earth is crying, it's in pain. The waters below are crying. They want to be close to the King, but they're not close. They're distant and they're far. So there is already a greater divide and a crack, so to speak, in creation between what is higher and what is lower, the various different dimensions. Then as creation emerges day after day, once the particular features and particulars of the creation emerge, the more you see you're going away from oneness, we're going into the many, the more of the concealment. That's why he says, and Rashi brings this in many places in the Parsha, a few places, that originally when Hashem created the world, He created, everything was created already the first day. Esa shamayim ve'esa aretz, the heaven and the earth, what is the word es? So Rashi says, es comes to include all the heavenly hosts. When He created the heavens, He created them with the stars, the moon, the sun, they were all created already the first day. When it says the earth, He created earth and all the creatures of the earth already on the first day. But where were they? So Rashi says they were still submerged in the earth. And where were the luminaries in the heaven? They were somehow lost in the heaven. What does that mean? It was still a very vague creation. Meaning things were still absorbed in their root, in their source. The deeper meaning of that means that things were still connected to Hashem. It was a world that was still very much connected, can still trace itself to the singular oneness where it all begins from. So you didn't notice the features, the individualities, the specifics of the creation. Everything was there already, but you didn't see it. It was all connected to its root. It's like the whole fruit when it's still in the seed. Just one seed. Even though we're already there, you have the leaves and the stem and the peel and the tail. It's all there. But it's all still in its very original state. The creations were still in their original state, connected to Hashem. Then as they emerged, they came out. Also spiritually it was that way. Hashem created the world. You see the process of coming from one to the many. Hashem created the world with 10 utterances. Suddenly we have a number 10. Before the 10 utterances, there's no 10, there's one, there's Hashem. 10 utterances, there is this and there is that. All the various different things come out. But really it says that before Hashem uttered 10 utterances, there was one utterance. And all the creations really were created with one utterance. It's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says like this, that Hashem created the world with 10 utterances. So the Mishnah says, wait, why did Hashem have to spend 10 utterances? He could have created it all with one utterance. With one mimer, which was one statement, He could have created the whole world. So the Mishnah answers whatever the Mishnah answers. So the simple way of understanding is, He could have created it with one, but He didn't. He created the world with many. But the Hasidic interpretation of this, or the deeper interpretation, is that He really did create the world in one. There's two dimensions to the creation. There is the initial creation where all the creation is created in one thought. B'maimar echad, which explainingly means not even so much words, but a thought. It's like glimpsing all of matter, all of time and all of space. Hashem sees it in one thought, in one scan. All of existence is still in that one seminal drop, in that one beginning, in that one point. And then Hashem said, that's a creation. That was a wonderful creation. All the creations are there, but the creations are still attached to their root, to Hashem. Then Hashem said, let the creation splinter into billions of pieces. Let everything emerge and just come out. And that's what there were, the 10 utterances and so forth, where the creations just emerged, each one identified in their own identity, in their own space. And coming, emerging with its own sense of beingness. Now, interesting, the more something emerges, the more something comes out, the greater the divine concealment. Again, if you see many, then you don't see the Hashem. It's harder to trace things back to their source because you're seeing this and you're seeing that, and that causes the confusion. Now, the less you see your source, the more you feel yourself. The more you feel yourself, the more chas v'shalom, and one can ignore God. In other words, if you recognize and feel, if one senses and feels that Hashem is my source of my existence, the source of my life, then what is my life all about? Serving Him? So I live in constant surrender to Him. If, however, You don't feel and you don't sense that oneness. If you don't sense Hashem creating, so then, who then takes God's place? Then you feel, and Chas v'Shalom, a person feels independent. I exist within my own existence, independent. That independency breeds rebellion or whatever. And I do what I want. Even if I know that Hashem doesn't approve, who cares? It's my life, it's my existence. I am. So the whole process and feeling of distortion, of feeling of it comes from the concealment, from the many in the world. Now, that's the world that Hashem wanted. He desired a world where he is hidden from the creations. He desired an olam, because he wanted man to work on discovering him. He wanted man to uncover the oneness in the many. And for that reason, that was man's task. So he created a world of 10 utterances, not of one utterance. And he said, now I want you to dig out the oneness, to connect everything back to its source, into the one Maimar Echad, back to its singular essence. That's your job. However, when God created it, even though he distinguished every creation, he didn't complete the act of concealment, of distinguishing things. He didn't complete that. Why? Because when Hashem created the world, there were no names for the individual creatures. I mean, after the 6 days of creation, let's say, for instance, when Hashem made vegetation, he said, let there be vegetation. But he didn't enumerate there should be vine or grapes or a cactus or peanuts or melons. He said, let there be vegetation. And the same as in all the other the animals. He didn't say, let there be this or let there be that. Let there be the general species, the general thing. So the world was characterized and defined with general characterizations. There was the mineral, there was the vegetation, and there was the animal. That created a certain achdus, a certain unity, because everything is just a mush. And therefore, they're still closer to their original oneness. When Adam HaRishon went and named every creature, say, giving every creature a sense of individuality, that caused more of a distinction. When every creature is more distinguishable, the more distinguishable something gets, the farther we're moving from unity and from oneness, the greater is the concealment and the greater is the darkness. And it's interesting that Hashem asked Adam to participate in this, even though this was not what man is all about. This is what God does. God conceals. But it's like Hashem told Adam Rishon, he brought the game and he said, now help me set up the board. Before we even start playing, you're going to be involved in setting up the game. So the last part of the concealment, Hashem to Adam, participate with me. Call all creatures by their name, furthering their independence, furthering their sense of disconnection, furthering the sense of multiplicity within the world. That's one way of looking at the calling of the names of the creation, increasing the darkness. But then there's a second thing. There is man's effect on the world. What is man's effect in this world? Man is supposed to accomplish in this world. Man is supposed to elevate the creation and reconnect all creation to oneness. Get everything back to its source. That very concealed and disconnected world, man has to bring it back. That's why we find when Hashem created Adam HaRishon, who is the first thing Adam HaRishon did? He called all the creations to serve God. There's an amazing Zohar in the end of Bereshit. It says like this, that when Adam HaRishon woke up and he stood up, the creations were so taken by his majestic beauty and by his awesome appearance that they all gathered around him and they all bowed down to him. He was. And then Adam called to the animals and he said, follow me, let us go bow down to God. It's just such a beautiful, if you can visualize that, all the creations first taken by Adam, and then he calls to them, everything, every creature, every being we know, and he says, come, let us bow down to Hashem. That was his first effect. Now, as part of doing that, he named every creation. As we mentioned earlier, what is the idea of naming something? The idea of naming something is to connect it to its spiritual source, and even deeper than spiritual source, connecting things to its godly source above, connecting the world back to its. And it's not just naming things. What's the point? You're naming, you're saying this is coming from there. It's about connecting. It's causing emergence between the physical thing and its spiritual source or its godly source, that the godly source should be expressed in the physical object, in the physical creation. Because quite on the surface level, we have a simple question. We said earlier that the angels couldn't, they were impressed by man's wisdom. They couldn't fathom, how does man know how to name all the animals? And here's just a simple question. We said earlier that why is the ox called an ox? Because it stems from the spiritual ox above. Who is the spiritual box of ox above? That's an angel. Who is the spiritual lion above? An angel. So all the malachim above, all the angels above, they are the root of all these animals. So how is it possible that they did not know the creations? They couldn't. How is it possible that the ox above couldn't recognize the ox below? If the ox is a derivative, his soul stems from the soul of that angel above. They are the very source of all the animals below. How is it possible they didn't notice it? Adam, who's not coming, who's not related to the animals, so to speak, he will know all the animals. And they wouldn't know. It's very hard to imagine that. Why wouldn't they know? And to argue and say, well, because they're so heavenly, so they didn't have any familiarity with this world. So the world is so far and they don't know this world. So they just look at it and they say, what's that? It just looks gooey and I don't know what. What is that? They don't know what it is. So if that, but Adam, he lived sort of in both, so he knows. But that's not a good answer, because then why would that be a flaw of the angels? Quite on the contrary, that shows how spiritual and how beautiful they are, that they don't even recognize these physical creatures stemming from them. So we need to understand, why didn't the angels recognize the creations? The answer is the angels recognized them. They recognized the beings, they knew. But the problem the angels had was, they couldn't connect, meaning make the physical object function as an expression of its spiritual root, of its spiritual source. These two remained separated. Because the ox above and the ox below are light years away. Meaning the spiritual ox and the spiritual, even though this comes from this, it comes through a very, very long chain progression till finally it manifests in a physical ox. Or let's take a look at the, for instance, the biggest, the best example would be the lion. A lion down here roars. Why is the animal roaring? Why is a lion roaring? The lion is roaring because it's expressing its passion. Its passion for what? It wants to shred an animal. It wants ribs. That's why it's shrieking. That's its roar. Or for whatever other passion that it has. Now in heaven, the lion above also roars. That's Malach Michoel, the Malach above, who's roaring because he wants to be absorbed in God's light. Now is there any connection between this roar and that roar? True, they both roar, but it's completely disconnected. Or look, for instance, we look at a human being, and we say like this, as an amazing, we look at the human being, and it says, when we're hungry, we get hungry. Why are we hungry? So for instance, when we have a craving for anything, we smell popcorn, and we say, I just want popcorn now. It's fresh popcorn, it's good. And you want to eat the popcorn. So, all right, what is that? It's a sensation. It's a physical sensation. And it's calling for your taste buds or whatever, are calling for that sensation. That's the experience of it. The Baal Shem Tov says, no, there's something much deeper than that. The Baal Shem Tov says, you know why you really want the popcorn? Is because your soul has an inner connection with the soul of the popcorn. Because in the corn... There are sparks of godliness, and those sparks are waiting to be retrieved. They're waiting to be elevated. And when you will eat that popcorn for the right purpose, you can lift the godly spark that's in that food and reconnect it to its source. That's what the Baal Shem Tov says. That the underlying every craving, every earthly craving we have, is a spiritual dimension, is a soul cry, is a soul desire. Now, for most people, when they desire the popcorn and they put a mouthful of popcorn, what is that? It's true. The soul is craving the spark of the popcorn, but that's not being realized in their munching and crunching of the popcorn. They're not in that munching. It isn't expressing anything spiritual. The godly craving of their soul remained unrealized. The spark has never been elevated, and all there was over here was a physical act that didn't take God into consideration at all. That's it. So it was just physical. When the Baal Shem Tov ate, was a whole different story. Because when he craved food, every craving was a manifestation of a spiritual desire. It's true by us too, but by us it remains in two separate realms. The soul remains locked away, disconnected from the physical craving. The Baal Shem Tov, in every single physical urge that he had, it was expressing his spiritual root of this origin, his neshama. Which means, and when he ate, his eating wasn't physical eating, it wasn't earthy eating, it was a soul eating. And it was a soul retrieving a spark, even though it was performed. He ate like everybody else ate. That's what tzaddikim eat. He ate, physically digesting the food. But the physical was projecting and revealing the spiritual. That is the idea of connecting the two. Angels above cannot do that. Angels cannot connect the two. Why? Because only the human being is given that ability to take heaven and earth and bring them together. By calling the name meaning revealing the spiritual source in the physical object, causing a harmony, causing a fusion. Why is man able to do that? Because man is a creature who is a combined of heaven and earth. He has a soul and a body. A soul who is close to heaven, who resides in heaven, who's plugged into heaven, and a body that's part of this world. He is the one who is able to balance the two, reveal the feelings of a soul in the body's workings. And then the same is also in every physical object in this world. The human can accomplish that, no other creature. That's why we find what happened to the angels in the end of the parasha, what happened to the angels. When they complained about man, Hashem, they said, why did you? So man was corrupt. And God said to the angels, he said to them, well, you think you would be better? And he cast the angels down here below. What happened to them? So when these very spiritual, sublime angels came down in this world and they took on and they reincarnated in a physical form, they were such monsters, they became the most corrupt beings ever to live, and they corrupted the entire world after them. The Nephilim, just this week in the parasha, the fallen angels. Why? Because angels can't handle earth. They come down, they lose it. We have our ups and downs, up and down, but we can manage it. Why? Because we have that ability. Adam has the ability to combine because he can call the name, connect things to their physical thing. And that's our job every day. We wake up in the morning, it's time to call names. What does it mean? As soon as you walk out into the street, as soon as you're faced with life, Hashem is giving you stuff. Everybody gets stuff. Everybody gets their materials. Everything is waiting to be called. The carpenter gets wood. He has to call its name. The smith gets metals that he has to call its names. The artist gets the canvas and the paint in which he has to reveal. Or it can be the computer or the steering or the mouse or the steering wheel in your car. Everything you have, you have to connect. Our job is to reveal its godly content by doing what? We're able to do this. By davening. We daven. We connect ourselves to the spiritual dynamics of our life, of our neshama. We make a connection above to God. And then when we walk out into the world, we know that everything in this world is created by Hashem for divine service. And by doing that, we utilize physical things for what their godly intention is. We reveal the neshama in the body. We reveal the name in the object. We change the world. That's the idea of name calling, of walking and calling everything in this world. That's our job, elevating the world. So now the question is, now we'll understand the reason why Adam HaRishon didn't, just to conclude quickly, the reason why Adam HaRishon, the question, did he name the fish or he didn't name the fish? And we'll understand that. And that's as follows. See, there's two forms of life in this world. There are fish or aquatic life, life in the sea, and there's life on land. A very discerning or very noticeable difference between the two is that the fish all live submerged in their environment. They're part of the ocean. They're part of them. Meaning they're still in cover. They're still, so to speak, in their source. Land creatures live above the surface, outside of the surface, outside of it. And for that reason, fish are far more vulnerable. They're more dependent on their source. And therefore, they're in a sense, they're holier creations. You know why they're holier? Because they feel the fact that physically they're in their source represents spiritually that they're still connected to God in a higher consciousness. They can't separate. The minute they separate, they die. Like when a person feels, when God holds us on a string, when we need Him, we need His miracles every day or else we can't live. When we feel that, we behave very well. If we suddenly feel I'm doing fine on my own, the moment you have the sense of independence, then, it's the more we feel you know, the we're not dependent on something. That creates the illusion of dependence, that we are on our own and we can do what we want. Land creatures live outside. They can live in different environments. It can, you can take a person can go in, or a land creature can go in the water, can go out of the water, can take them on an airplane, can take them out of space if you give them the right thing. So it's not as dependent on its source. Therefore, it says that fish are less susceptible to corruption. By the Mabul, the fish did not get corrupted. They remained pure. Why didn't the fish remain pure? Because their very creation is one that they're deeper attached to their roots, to their source, and they can't be persuaded to go off on what God has created them, because they're lacking the Bechira. Why they're lacking the Bechira? Because they're in a state of deeper connection to Hashem. Animals are also don't have Bechira, but they have the animal world and the human world. Being that we're living in land life represents disconnected from its source, in a state where we have, on the one hand, of course, that gives us an opportunity to serve or not to serve. That is the disconnection from the source. That's what man has. That's what land creatures have over the animals. And now we'll understand also the reason. So now, why didn't Adam name the fish? He didn't name the fish because that would be defeat what the opposite of what the fish are supposed to represent. Fish are supposed to be in their source. Naming something, as we said earlier, is to distinguish something, disconnecting it from its source, according to the first explanation of naming, causing increased concealment, emphasizing the individuality of things. Fish don't need that. Fish are embedded in their source. That's why the Medrash is a Medrash. Oh, it's so amazing. The Medrash Talpia says an interesting thing. That fish are not makabel tumah. They don't get ritually impure. Why don't fish makabel tumah? So the Medrash, she brings from a sefer. I never heard of this sefer before. Saidi, where is it over here? Saidi Raza. This may be some kabbalistic sefer or something. And he says that the reason why the fish were not named, or the reason why the fish don't become tummy, is because Adam didn't name them. What does one have to do? They're not accepting tumah because Adam didn't name them. And the answer is, makes sense now. Because the naming of it is causing the distinction and the separation. That's why they don't get tameh. They don't get impure. Because they always remain pure. They always remain connected to their source. There's no point in naming the fish. However, if the purpose of naming the creations was the opposite, was elevating the world and reconnecting everything to have even a deeper connection to its source, the fish too can use that elevation. Because even though they're connected, but there's levels and levels in connection. And there's higher connection and deeper connection. So the fish too have some ego. They have a small ego, but some ego they have. And Adam Rishon has the ability not only to raise the land creations, but to raise all creations, even the fish, and elevate all of creation to God. So the lesson of all this to all of us is the incredible power we have in every moment of our life to call names, to everything give it its names, everything to connect heaven and earth, to merge Hashem with the creation. And by completing that, we will merge the world with Hashem and bring Mashiach very, very soon. Good night.